This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Station. KPFT can help turn the tide for peace and justice, but only when more people know about it. We must work together to reach more listeners so we can make our station a more influential voice for truth and reason. Will you help us in this by telling your family, coworkers, and online friends about your favorite KPFT programs? Let's make KPFT known as the place for uncensored news, music, and public affairs in our area. I'm Bill Crozier, and I thank you for supporting our station for peace.
That was a statement by Bill Crozier. Let your voice be heard with your vote. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And on the show this evening, we have a discussion of something, and then we're going to have news wrap from This Way Out, and then Chris Kerr, the clinical director of the Montrose Counseling Center, will be here to discuss the HATCH program at the center and where it's headed this fall. And then in the second hour at 10 o'clock, Johnny Hooks, the PR and marketing director of the Theater Under the Stars, will discuss the 2009-2010 season and the GLBT program called Out at Tuts. And then around 10:22 or so, we'll have the Greater Houston GLBT Chamber of Commerce. They're going to join us to talk about their programs and what's ahead for the rest of the year. And that's going to be followed by the feature segments from This Way Out.
Well, tonight we're going to just open up and sort of talk about a number of things that are going on in the community. I first of all want to open up and talk about the meeting that went on last Wednesday of ARCH, which is the group of people who are working on archiving digitally a number of history items in the community. And I was very impressed with the meeting. This is the first one I went to since...
I haven't made it. I've been wanting to go, but it's been going on for a couple of months.
First of all, it was held at the Montrose Counseling Center first floor, which is a GLBT cultural center, which...
I saw that. It's...
I am in awe of what they're doing over there. The first floor is dedicated. I mean, I knew they were talking about this, and they did it, but this is the first time I've actually went to a meeting there. Now, nothing fancy. It's a room with chairs.
It's a room that everybody knows, and that's where the meetings are, and it's great.
And there are a number of organizations that now have offices there, including HATCH, which is part of the Montrose Counseling Center. Pride has an office there, and I'm forgetting it. The people who do the museum, the gay museum people, actually
GCAM
put up displays on the walls, which really, really make that.
I love that.
Change it out. I know I've talked about this before, but now the fact that it's still going on, that they still are changing out things and putting displays up there to talk about our history. What was really neat about this, there must have been about 30 people there, and it representatives from the Houston Library System, all volunteering their time, Rice University, University of Houston. There were people there from the two groups that do that, that save the stuff, the part of the BOTS collection at RMCC.
There's the BOTS, and what's the other collection?
It's GCAM.
Yeah.
And the idea of this is that they've written a grant that they're submitting to, even if the grant doesn't come through, they're already organized. And what I'm really excited about this is I've seen a number of organizations in this community sort of have trouble keep on going or seeing a mission or not getting along with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But this organization seems like they really got it. And what I think is they're trying to not take over what the two other groups are doing, but basically enabling the stuff to be online.
Exactly.
And also doing oral history, which is very much what radio is sort of all about. If you listen to NPR, This I Believe, or some of the stuff that they do where people just talk about their lives and what's going on, and not necessarily just the leaders of the community, but all different types of the community.
Well, I think they're adding value, and they're taking what the GCAM and the BOTS collection have and allowing other people to access it and get in on the internet and digitizing it.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's kind of spreading the history and the wealth.
And these people are professionals in the fact that, you know, it's not like you just have somebody sit down in front of a microphone and record them, although sometimes you can get great things like that, like sometimes this show does. But that you have, you know, there's certain standards of how the stuff is saved, the format of how it's saved, of what people talk about so that there's some continuity, and that they're also doing this Wikipedia, which is sort of a organizational type of thing of history of the community. And as people add stuff, they're able to add stuff onto that Wikipedia. Sort of things like, I don't know if it's not there yet, but like the past Grand Marshals of Pride or the past presidents of the caucus, those type of things can be added on there because most organizations are always struggling to keep on going. They don't think about the historical aspect. And I think what this really could lead to is that we would have some type of glue in the community so that we're not reinventing ourselves all the time.
Absolutely. And I think you should credit Brian Riedel.
Absolutely.
I was going to ask who is spearheading that. It's been Brian, isn't it? Brian Riedel out at Rice University.
And there's a number of other people from the other organizations that I mentioned.
He's kind of the face and kind of the spoke of the wheel, kind of organizing everything.
But there's a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. And just as when we talked about that book about Stonewall by David Carter, is that he put that book together before we lost all the people that were at Stonewall.
Exactly.
And he was able to get so much. He spent 10 years doing it. But this is the time to do it before we lose that Stonewall generation and the history that they had contributed. Although we have already lost a lot of people because of, you know, AIDS.
Right.
But there's still a lot of people around that still may have these collections. And there's also a lot of people, and certainly Judy Reeves can talk about that, that, you know, have stuff and they just throw them out. And this history that we may not be able to put together somewhere, and certainly they have a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that we're losing.
Yeah. And it's all on paper, and it'll eventually just, in Houston humidity, just disintegrate into nothing.
Well, there needs to be a place where they can have a repository. So if you have something that it can, you know, you can donate it to one organization or the other, and so that we have it so it can be digitalized.
Don't throw out your twits from the 80s and 90s.
Oh, I did. Sorry.
I love those. Okay.
Well, and I think they have copies of all of that. But what's nice about this is if they put it online, it's available at any time to anybody. You don't have to keep digging into these crates or finding them if you're doing some type of research and trying to find out what happened to an organization or what's going on. And I think this is, I just can't say how much I appreciated what they're doing.
Absolutely.
And we've got the March on Washington coming up next month. Well, it's actually not September yet,
October,
but tomorrow.
Yes, October 10th, 11th in D.C. And I attended.
There's some organizations here in Houston organizing to travel up there together. And
there's
sort
kind
of thing.
Of
a
grassroots.
Can you tell me about that?
There's a grassroots movement to get Houston to go to the march, to have a large Houston delegation. And I attended a meeting yesterday, which was with kind of the youth of the community. I hate to say youth, but, you know, the younger members. And they're working on getting a van system, like a group of vans to drive up to the march, which I can't imagine. But there's three vans that are going to drive up, and they're working on kind of funding that and everything. And there was about 20 or 30 people that showed up to this meeting yesterday.
So cool. Hey, road trips are fun.
Absolutely. So they're, if you're out there and you're thinking about going to the march, you can get a ride with them.
Who do you contact?
Well, the best way is to go onto Facebook and go to Houston Equality March. There's a group for that. Just do a search on that, and all of the information is there. And we just set up a Google group yesterday.
A Google group?
A Google group for that. So we're going to start sharing and dispensing information.
And if you're not on Facebook, get on Facebook. So you can also access Queer Voices on Facebook.
Yeah, if you're not on Facebook, then you're really
behind.
Please
be our fan.
Yeah, well, join our group. But they are also planning, for those who are not going to D.C., there's a plan to have a Houston-type event. And I know the...
I know that the Houston GLBT Political Caucus is organizing sort of a march on Houston.
Yes. I met Christina yesterday, and she is a firecracker.
Oh, yes.
I was impressed. She's really got some energy.
And she's sort of the chair from the caucus, and they're organizing some event. There'll be an event... tentative plans now. You can go to the caucus website or contact them, but or listen to us for that matter.
There's going
to
be kind of a sympathetic march here.
Yeah, it's going to be it'll be sort of ad hoc. It'll be at city. You'll start at City Hall and organize and sort of do the march. Everyone who wants to be part of that, who can't make it to Washington, D.C., will have an opportunity to show their support for the GLBT community. So it's not just GLBT people, but also our friends and allies.
Well, I think if you can go to D.C., it's an awesome experience. I went to the 1993 march on D.C., and it changed my life. I mean, to see all the people there marching. If you can go, it's a great thing to do, to go and see. And we're working on getting Houston together, and we started talking about getting maybe a statewide march, getting Austin and Dallas to kind of walk with us and just carry Texas flags and kind of.
Are they individually doing that in those cities?
Well, we haven't made contact with them yet. We just started talking about that, but we want, you know, Texas to be out queer in front of the Capitol, and we're Texans and we're gay, and believe it or not,
hold our picture of Rick Perry.
Exactly. Governor Goodhead.
In drag.
Exactly.
Well, will El Paso be marching with Texas or New Mexico?
I don't know.
Or Mexico.
Right. Juarez.
Or Lebanon.
But the march is October 10th and 11th in D.C. It coincides with the national or the coming out day.
Or there's a whole different event around Coming Out Day, which
right.
is that same weekend.
Yes.
And I know that the GLBT Community Center has something in the works. I don't know the details of it, but I do know that,
yes.
that it has. I have
Things
heard
are
about it
together.
At different events.
Yeah.
Well, it's a convenient weekend. Everything's happening on that weekend. It sort of falls in place for everyone who's interested in doing something and being a part of the moment. If you will,
I think
do something.
The moment is now. I think a march is this is a good time for a march to kind of make our position known and our quest for equality and, you know, where we are politically at this point and where we need to go. I think this is a good time for the march.
Well, a lot of it's done. We lost our the lion of the Senate, which doesn't help the GLBT movement. We lost a real friend in the Senate.
Irreplaceable, yeah.
It was fortunate. I read that Senator Kennedy had been working with a number of other senators to hand off the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, the inclusive, to
mm-hmm.
some other senators, because he realized that more than likely he would not make it to see it
yeah.
passed. So he made sure that it had some strong proponents in the Senate to see that it would happen. You know, it's he was always thinking of the next generation, the next group. Someone we'll really miss as far as a movement is concerned, as an activist, that we'll miss somewhere. And, of course, the health care.
Yeah, I read something that they're trying to name the public option for Teddy Kennedy, something like that.
Well, the Republicans are the conservatives. I don't want to denigrate any Republicans out there. The conservatives have already named it Obamacare.
Yes.
Well, I would take that name.
Yeah. I like Americare.
2009 is the 40th anniversary of a number of things, and we talked about definitely Stonewall.
Oh, really? What?
Stonewall,
yeah.
The fake moon landing? No, the real moon landing.
Oh, that's funny.
The real moon landing.
You know, and Glenn works for NASA. He'll be upset.
Well, maybe Glenn has a fake job.
He can take you to the set.
He just tells us he goes to work.
He can take you to the secret set where they actually did the moon landing.
And then, of course, Woodstock. And there's a new movie that just opened up. It's playing at the River Oaks, and it's called Taking Woodstock.
Yes.
It's a wonderful movie done by An Lee, who's done some great mm-hmm. films, including The Wedding Banquet.
And Brokeback Mountain.
No. Yes. And this is based on a true story, although I'm sure it's been
it's been dressed up by Hollywood.
Yeah, it's been dressed up a little bit.
The main character is gay. I didn't.
Well, that's the incredible thing. And
well, who else could throw a party like that?
When you watch the film in the beginning, he mentions about this riot that happened in New York City.
I know. I caught that.
And I'm not sure everybody caught that, but
yeah.
that's how An Lee does a lot of these films. There's so much going on in it, and it's just a wonderful, happy film about this coming of age of this person, and also dealing with how the 60s were. And it was sort of the end of the 60s.
Oh, yeah. And if you don't get a chance to go there, if you happen to be watching the History Channel, They do Woodstock now and then. I happened to watch it last weekend, and it was very good as far as just, you know, how the History Channel does these docudramas. It was very good.
Well, I would highly suggest going and seeing the movie. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, for me, it was like the behind the scenes of how everything was done.
It's not a documentary on Woodstock itself. It's sort of a documentary on how the behind the scenes, how they put it on.
The mom is crazy. I love her.
The mom is crazy. Max, the guy who owned the farm that Woodstock was actually.
Max
Yager, is it?
Yagut.
Yes. I did catch one thing that couldn't have been true. When they were watching TV, they had rabbit ears. Well, you can't get a signal in upstate New York without a big antenna.
Only you would know.
Only Jack. That was one of those little trivials of Jack's.
Well, and, you know, 17B, that's exactly where it was. They mentioned that route number, New York State route. And I grew up about 60 miles from where Woodstock happened, and I had relatives that lived outside of Monticello. So it's just
that's
a
where
real...
they had the gangs and the track, they said in the movie.
The track means the racetrack, Monticello racetrack. And it was a that it was sort of the Catskills. That area was a big resort area for especially Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was starting to decline because it was getting cheaper for people to fly to go to other places. And this was sort of a last-ditch effort for this guy's parents to keep their hotel going. And it just happened to be that it was the center of the universe of where they put this this festival on because they were denied a permit from another town.
Mm-hmm.
And just a real interesting thing. And I would definitely recommend. And it's wonderful to see it at River Oaks.
I love going to River Oaks. And I'm thinking we're counting the days because I see that new Barnes & Noble across the street.
Yes.
Which still hasn't opened.
Hasn't opened, but, you know, it looks very nice. I'm thinking, you know, one day they're going to tear down River Oaks and do something there.
So, you know, if you get an opportunity to go, support it and also experience the history. You can hear the echoes of history in there.
And where else can you go and get a glass of wine and go sit down in a movie and watch it?
Well, almost any bar in town.
But not a movie theater.
Oh, okay. Well, that's true, but you can see a real show.
Yeah.
That's just sitting on a bar stool seeing the show.
There you go. But no, the lead character's love interest, who kissed him in the movie, that was very attractive.
Well, especially being the year 1969.
Right, and it's amazing to think that this was going on the same time Stonewall was, and they seem so different in times. Like, it seems to me like Stonewall was so far along.
Well, Woodstock was sort of a rebellion.
Yeah.
And so was Stonewall. And the whole 60s was a rebellion on what was going on with the war and for civil rights and for
the sexual revolution
and women's rights. And the last one, 1969, was GLBT rights.
Right.
That's it.
So, and then, of course, in 1970, there were a lot of campuses shut down by the unrest.
Oh, my campus wasn't. When you're in a small college in Louisiana, you know, they don't, which has an active ROTC program, you don't have too many protests. But I was there for women's rights protest.
I wasn't born yet.
Yes. Well, it was one of those times I would have burned my bra, but only had one at the time. So I didn't.
No.
Well, let's
those were the early days.
Let's play some music now, and we'll go into news wrap from
I want to do one more thing.
Oh,
I want to announce this is the seventh week that Larry Marshall, president of the HISD school board, has not returned my phone call.
Now, why are you trying to get a return phone call from him?
I have been working for almost 8 months to lobby HISD to add sexual orientation and gender identity to their non-discrimination policy.
They have neither?
They have neither there. They have added sexual orientation to their
bullying?
Student code of conduct as far as bullying, mm-hmm. which they don't enforce, by the way. But the fact is that the employees, the teachers, don't have any protection as far as GLBT. We, as you remember, if you listen to our program a lot, we had a gentleman here not too long ago on a different interview, but at the end he announced that he had been a school teacher in HISD and had lost his job.
Yeah, that's my friend Juan Alvarado.
Yes, and so this is something that needs to happen, and currently the person standing in the way is Larry Marshall. I have given him the language, I've given him about the research. I have been working within the administration for over 8 months now. Actually, it's longer than that. And they've done their research. Now it's just a matter of the board taking some action.
Now, getting a new superintendent, will that make any difference?
The superintendent, that's the new superintendent, came from San Diego. Right. San Diego already has a non-discrimination for sexual orientation, gender identity.
Really?
So, and before that, so the last two school districts he's worked in already have GLBT protections in their non-discrimination. It's time for Houston to have it. It wasn't too long ago that Houston ISD was had clearly on their website negative anti-GLBT language, which they eventually took down. But we're in a situation that many teachers are in jeopardy of their job. Now, I have spoken with members of the teachers union, and they are in support of this. But as we have noticed, the board doesn't seem to be in favor of any kind of unions.
Are they worried about getting reelected, or I wonder? I guess you can only speculate.
You can only expect that. I always, from my perspective, and it's my perspective only, is if anyone, any of the board members who don't screen or want to screen with the caucus are anti-GLBT. Mm. Or that would be a good indication.
Yeah.
So we're in a situation now, so we should have, there are three board members that have been very supportive of our community.
So we're slowly bringing the change to
HISD. HISD needs to come into the 21st century. They keep saying their statement, their official statement, which I have in a letter from HISD, is that they have all the necessary protections that are already covered in law.
Well, and that's a good point. We don't have protection in the law.
We don't. But many other businesses and school districts around the country already have protections.
Right.
The majority of school districts in America have protections for at least sexual orientation, many sexual orientation.
I would bet
identity.
That's the majority of the metropolitan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But there are some rural areas. All of Iowa is GLBT friendly.
What is up with Iowa? How come they're so progressive?
I think that they just are very intelligent.
That's interesting.
And stubborn.
And stubborn.
Good for them.
And stubborn. Somebody tell them they can't do something. Go out and do it.
You go, corn
you
people.
You go, Joan.
Corn people of Iowa, unite. I love it.
Yeah. But if you know of anyone of the members on the HISD board, give them a call. Call the office, the switchboard there at HISD, and ask them to consider expanding their non-discrimination policy to include sexual orientation, gender identity. I'd love to see their switchboard light up and fill up their message bins tomorrow.
This sounds like a march. Should we organize a march?
Let's give Larry another week.
And we continue on Larry Watch.
Yes, and we will, you know, we will announce next week if Larry Marshall has not returned my phone call.
Wait, are you holding your breath?
Oh, no. No. I'm not holding my breath.
You'd be blue and pretty much lifeless by next week, I think.
Absolutely. No, I understand that he comes from a conservative area. But the fact
is...
So
did
you? So did I. Absolutely. But what's right is right.
Yeah. It's fear, I think.
Well, without protections in writing and a statement, many GLBT teachers and employees are frightened of losing their jobs simply because someone doesn't like them. It's a form of employment terrorism.
It is.
Yes, it is.
Well, you're listening to Crew of Voices, and we're going to play some music.
Just across the street, I look, but we rarely meet, just to pass the time of day, which is hers, and the night it is mine. Oh, I wish I could be brave. Sometimes
2007, that was Teresa Perry, a song called Brave Song from her album Weightless. This is Queer Voices.
I'm Christopher David Trentum.
And I'm Jen Mahoney.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 29th, 2009. Uruguay's Chamber of Deputies this week approved a measure to open adoption to gay and lesbian couples. The vote was 40-13, with 46 members absent in the 99-seat chamber. The Senate approved a similar version of the bill in July, so it's expected to pass there in mid-September with minor amendments inserted by the lower house. The law is supported by Socialist President Tabaré Vázquez's Broad Front coalition government, which has already established same-gender civil unions, and ended a ban on gays and lesbians in the armed forces. Lawmakers also approved a bill last year allowing people aged 12 and older to change their names, a legal advance for transgender youth. Uruguay's Roman Catholic Church and right-wing politicians vigorously opposed the government's latest move. Archbishop of Montevideo Nicolas Cortuño told the Catholic news agency that the adoption of children by homosexual couples is not a question of religion, philosophy, or sociology. To accept the adoption of children by homosexual couples is to go against human nature itself. The small country of about 3.5 million people in southeastern South America leads the region in sexual minority rights. Opening adoptions to same-gender couples would be another Uruguayan first. Gays and lesbians have, in the past decade, won the right to adopt in South Africa and in some areas of Europe, North America, and Australia. Those rights vary greatly, however. Some laws permit lesbian and gay couples to adopt children who are not related to them, and others only allow the same-gender partner of a biological parent to adopt that person's offspring.
Germany's highest court this week ruled that gays and lesbians can adopt their partner's children. The justices of the Federal Constitutional Court overruled a lower court ruling, which concluded that allowing the female partner to adopt the child would undermine the rights of the other biological parent. The earlier decision, the High Court judgment said, failed to consider the fact that the role of a child's parent is not only determined by his or her biological progenitor, but based on the social familial community caring for the child. Gay and lesbian people or couples in Germany still cannot adopt children they're not related to.
Florida is the only U.S. state with a law excluding all gays and lesbians from adopting, although they are allowed to be foster parents. The measure was enacted in 1977 during the height of Anita Bryant's Save Our Children campaign against the gay rights ordinance in Dade County. A Florida appeals court heard a challenge to the law this week. At issue is whether or not it serves a rational purpose. A lower court ruled that it does not. Defending the ban was Timothy D. Osterhaus, Deputy Solicitor General for Florida Attorney General Bill McCollum. In response to a justice's question about the parental fitness of gays and lesbians, Osterhaus said that there is evidence that homosexuals have higher rates of mental disorders, suicide rates, and domestic violence. This is a plausible rationale for the ban. Miami-Dade Circuit Judge Cindy Letterman concluded in the lower court case last November that there was little credible evidence to support such claims. In fact, she said, her review of 30 years of scientific research showed that gays and lesbians could be equally effective parents and that their children suffer no harm. One of the state's two expert witnesses acknowledged that parental fitness should be made on a case-by-case basis, and the other cited his religious beliefs in opposing adoption equality. The American Civil Liberties Union is representing Martin Gill of North Miami, who wants to adopt the two half-brothers he and his partner have been fostering for the past 4 years. The Florida Supreme Court is eventually expected to rule on the issue.
Same-gender couples began registering their relationships in Nevada this week in advance of a new state domestic partners law that takes effect in October. The statute creates a civil contract that allows qualifying couples, both same-gender and heterosexual, to receive the same rights, protections, benefits, responsibilities, obligations, and duties as married heterosexual couples in all but name. Applicants pay a $50 fee when submitting notarized documents to the Secretary of State's office. The law is unclear about domestic partner health care benefits, however. It doesn't require businesses to offer them, but it also prohibits employers from discriminating against gay and lesbian workers.
Wisconsin's Democratic Governor Jim Doyle appointed a veteran civil rights lawyer this week to defend a challenge to his state's domestic partnership law after Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen refused to do so. Madison attorney Lester Pines is already involved in a court challenge to the state's 2006 constitutional ban on same-gender marriages or civil unions. He said that there is an overwhelmingly strong case for the constitutionality of the domestic partner registry. The right-wing group, Wisconsin Family Action, filed suit against the law, which took effect in August, charging that it violated the 2006 voter-approved ban. The partnership law, however, grants only about a fourth of the benefits marriage provides, but does include hospital visitation and inheritance rights.
The El Paso, Texas City Council voted 7-1 this week to extend health care benefits to the domestic partners of city employees, including same-gender partners. The vote followed hours of public comment about whether to include domestic partner health benefits in next year's city budget. It's expected to cover around 45 employees at a cost of up to $390,000. The city already has an ordinance banning discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Heated debate in the third hearing in 3 weeks that the council held on the partnership benefits touched on justice and morality. The only council member to vote against the measure cited economic concerns and his religious beliefs. The vote came on the heels of a highly publicized incident at an El Paso restaurant in July when a small group of gay friends was ejected when two of them began kissing.
The Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission announced this week that two of its agents and their immediate supervisor have been fired for their actions in the controversial raid on Fort Worth's Rainbow Lounge gay bar on June 28th. A higher-up supervisor received a 3-day suspension without pay and 6 months probation, while another got a written reprimand. Two TABC agents had accompanied Fort Worth police officers to the Rainbow Lounge for what they claimed was a routine inspection of the newly licensed bar. Several customers said that they were roughed up during the raid. Six were arrested for public intoxication, and one patron, Chad Gibson, suffered serious head injuries. The TABC investigation concluded that its agents participated in the raid without approval and in unapproved attire, that they disrupted business by failing to follow inspection procedures, failed to report using force against patrons, and failed to report the injury to Gibson, who spent a week in the hospital and still has a blood clot behind his right eye. A group formed after the raid, Fairness Fort Worth, said that the disciplinary actions were appropriate, as are policy changes the Liquor Board is reportedly developing. Officials at the Fort Worth Police Department are still conducting their own internal investigation.
There have been new arrests and convictions for same-gender relations in Senegal, according to the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, or IGLHRC. The advocacy group reported that two men were convicted in mid-August of illegal sexual acts against nature and jailed for 2 and 5 years, respectively. A 17-year-old arrested at the same time was at last report still being tried. The situation of a fourth man is unknown. IGLHRC said denunciations from neighbors were the only evidence against the men. There has been a series of arrests in the predominantly Muslim Western African nation since early 2008, the rights group said, for incitement to debauchery, corruption of good behavior, acts against the order of nature, indecent conduct, and homosexual marriage. IGLHRC also reported recent incidents of desecration of gay men's graves and exhumation of their bodies. Senegal's sexual minorities have no legal protections. The country's penal code punishes private, consensual, adult gay sex with up to 5 years in prison and a fine equivalent to $3,000.
But finally, facing a lawsuit, a school district in central New York has agreed to take immediate action to protect its openly LGBT students. A federal judge approved steps to be taken by the district in Herkimer that were suggested by the New York Civil Liberties Union, which represented a 14-year-old student identified only as Jacob. The specifics of the settlement were not disclosed. According to the lawsuit, Jacob suffered constant verbal abuse for 2 years and regularly had things thrown at him. Some of his personal property was also vandalized. One student threatened him with a knife, and another pushed him down a flight of stairs. Even though district officials that included the superintendent and the school principal were notified of the incidents, they took no disciplinary action against any of Jacob's attackers. Vowing to monitor the policy changes promised in the settlement, NYCLU lead attorney Corey Stoughton said that it shouldn't take a lawsuit to motivate school district officials to protect a student from vicious harassment.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 29th, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK, Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher David Trentum.
And I'm Jen Mahoney.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And in the studio tonight, we have Chris Kerr, who is the clinical director for the Montrose Counseling Center, overseeing the HATCH program. And welcome, Chris.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we kind of were talking around last week, and we're like, okay, school's starting, so we need to talk about our GLBT youth and what's going on and what are some resources for them. And, of course, HATCH came to mind. So, Chris, what is HATCH for our listeners that may not know?
Well, HATCH is our gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender teen peer support program. It's a program for teens who are 13 to 21. It's a support program. We run 3 evenings of programming, Friday, Sunday, and Tuesday night. Our usual HATCH module of a night is the first hour is social. The second hour is some kind of educational input or activity, social activity, anything that helps build esteem, knowledge, experience, community. And then the last hour is a peer-led support group.
Hmm.
Tuesday night's a little different because there's some after-school tutoring that goes on, there's creative writing, and then there's a transgender teen peer support group specifically on Tuesday nights now.
Now, HATCH used to have, it was an acronym for something, but I understand that it's kind of just HATCH now.
It was, when it was originally founded, it was the Houston Area Teen Coalition of Homosexuals. And that's still a treasured historical name, but homosexuals, it does not include now all the diversity of
right.
Gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, questioning, and allies and all that.
Mm-hmm. Just too many letters.
Yes,
too long of a name.
Yeah, right. Now, how long has HATCH been around? I know it was kind of its own organization and was brought under the umbrella, the massive umbrella of the Montrose Counseling Center.
It's about 20 years.
20 years.
They've been around for a while.
Yeah, there are people my age that were in it in their teens and now they're in the mid-30s, and they still talk about it. You know, it's kind of a very treasured asset to our community.
And it made a difference. It made a difference for lots of people.
And it still does.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, is it still needed as much in our society now that we're becoming more open and people are coming out at an earlier age and are feeling more comfortable? Or does it still provide some role?
we believe it still has a fairly a strong role and a strong need. We hear that a lot. Isn't it easy now, and you don't really need a special program because people can just be themselves everywhere.
But isn't it more important now than it was because of that?
Oh, that's a good point.
Well, yes, but it's also, I mean, the myth is, and that's maybe a kind of part of the Hollywood myth, that it's easy to come out, and if you're going to go to school, everybody there is going to accept you, and there'll be a gay-straight alliance, and there's all these people out in politics, on TV, and all that, and maybe if
except
you're
except at HISD.
Yes. Maybe if you're famous and you're rich, it might be easy to come out, but do you still tell the stories of the violence and the harassment and the homophobia that they face on a daily basis, and that's pretty well across the country. You might, if you're lucky, you might live in a pocket, or you might live with a very special family in a very special pocket with a very enlightened school system. But I think that's more luck and rare. If you look at, printed out a couple of studies, and if anybody ever wants to go to the GLSEN website, GLSEN, and that's mm-hmm. the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network.
Mm-hmm.
They've done studies. The last one specifically focused on, it's always on youth in high school, GLBT youth. The mm-hmm. last one focused specifically on transgender youth. The one before that was general GLBT youth, and the statistics are still staggering.
Really?
The amount of violence, the amount of homophobia. Just to go through that really quick, about 86% of GLBT students reported being verbally harassed. 44% reported being physically harassed. 21% or 22% report being physically assaulted in the school in the past year because of their sexual orientation.
Wow.
One of the sad statistics is a number of them report that the teachers were witnesses and or even contributed to the...
Just turn a blind
to that. Wow. And the transgender kids have it even worse. And the numbers are higher for that.
I can imagine.
Well, and that's unfortunately in the Houston Independent School District, it's that way. Yeah. I alluded to that earlier. So they just don't... the bullying law is there, the code of conduct is there, but they just don't enforce it. And the reason they will normally take the gay, lesbian, transgender kid and put them in an alternate school because they're the troublemaker.
Yeah.
The reason being that if they weren't gay, lesbian, or transgender, there wouldn't be a problem. So therefore, they're the troublemaker.
You mean if they weren't, air quote, normal?
If they were normal, like the people who beat them up,
right?
Well, and the kids are told that it's your fault because you're bringing this on yourself, and if you could be less gay, or if you could just hide it, and if you could just pass for straight, then this wouldn't be happening to you. So it's another example of blaming the victim, and then you double traumatize. The first time you're being assaulted, and the second time the people who are supposed to take care of you and care for your safety and defend you don't.
Now, within your organization in Hatch and all, there's some support for the kids when they get this kind of... this happens to them. You know, anybody that's mistaken, that doesn't happen just as living with their head in the sand.
Yes.
It happens, but there's some support for them through Hatch.
And,
it gives them a place to vent and to talk about it.
Well, it's necessary support. I mean, the statistics, I gave you that just for the in-school problems, but the GLBT teens, you know, our most precious resource in our community, I think, is our youth and our teens. I mean, they're going to be our future. And the at-risk numbers are still incredibly high. I mean, 1 in 4 attempt suicide. It's 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 when they come out to their parents are homeless.
Mm.
They're more likely to be successful at suicide if they attempt it. They're at risk for drug abuse, for the homelessness, for survival sex, for HIV, and all those things. And it's amazing, you know, of all the interventions that you could do to help, I keep telling people the most effective, least costly, and simple intervention that can change the lives of these youth is to connect them with other youth like themselves.
Right.
Exactly.
To break out of that shell and that loneliness and let them know that there's somebody else. And if a youth can come to a meeting and maybe come to Hatch on a Friday, Sunday, or both, and make that connection and talk about what goes on in their schools or their neighborhoods or their church and hear other kids' stories, and then they start saying, well, this is how I handle it. But if they know that they're abnormal and
they're
unaccepted, they can put up with a lot from there on. I mean, that builds their resiliency and can make them stronger. And it still hurts they get hit, but there's a difference. When you're hit and you say, this is because I'm a bad, terrible person, or they're treating this way because I'm an abomination, that's a real deadly kind of shame or wound. But when you're hit and you're saying, that's because there's something wrong with them.
Them, not me.
Not me.
Yeah.
And this has to change, and I'm going to try to work to make a change. That's a whole different thing. And that's what Hatch offers. We also do. We also can kind of at times bring the Hatch program into schools. Sometimes different schools and the counselors in the schools. Besides our programming, we'll invite our people in to do an hour group for GLBT youth in that particular high school. That seems to make a particular difference, even though it's an hour. You know, once the kids can see the other kids who are GLBT. Even if you don't become friends with them, the fact that when you're walking the hallways and you start spotting kids you say, I'm not alone, or you might sit with them at lunch, then in a way you've almost made the whole school day a Hatch, because it can become a social outlet and they can start finding safety that way. We also, this year will be the first time that we will be able to actually go into HISD and actually do some counseling and groups. Besides the support groups that we've done through Hatch, the actual group therapy and counseling, especially around depression for GLBT teens.
Hmm.
So if you're a GLBT teen and you're attending HISD and you'd like counseling, then you should go to your community in the schools counselor and say you would like some counseling from Hatch or from the Montrose Counseling Center, and they're supposed to call us and help us set that up.
Well, if maybe the school doesn't call, is there a way they can get in contact with you directly?
They can call us directly at the Montrose Counseling Center.
What's the, do you know the number?
The number is 713-529-0037. And they can always check out our website, you know, the Montrose Counseling Center, all one word, .org. And then Hatch has its own website. Hatch has a great website. The youth are so far ahead of us.
They're light years ahead of us.
Oh, absolutely.
We try to keep up, but we do try to give as much good information and connections. So that's at www.hatchyouth.org.
Yeah, we're talking with Chris Kerr, Clinical Director of the Montrose Counseling Center, about the Hatch program. One of the things, and I know you mentioned HISD, and I don't want to beat them up completely, but the fact is that, is there any program that's in there to counsel or talk with or educate the counselors themselves at HISD?
Well, I don't know if they have it specifically, and it really depends on the school system, and sometimes in each little division and school, and those depend on the principal and the kinds of in-services they do. And Hatch, in the past, has been invited to different schools to do some of that summer in-service work. And PFLAG has, for a while, and they're getting back into it, has done some marvelous work with their anti-bullying campaign. A while back, they even did that with the coaches, and it's amazing to do GLBT sensitivity with coaches. And it's time to get that back going.
That would
again.
Be amazing.
It's time to get that up. Because if nothing else, even in HISD and other school districts where there can be a lot of GLBT prejudice, when you talk about anti-bullying and that each student, no matter what, has a right to safety in a school and to be free from bullying and harassment, it's hard for a school system to say no to that.
Are not safe here.
Yeah, and they get really embarrassed if they find that their students really aren't safe. That's usually why they don't like these kinds of studies to go on, and oftentimes a lot of school districts won't let them ask as they do these studies, ask if they're GLBT, because once you do that, you have to do something about the information you get.
Well, when I first began lobbying HISD around non-discrimination, one of the statements made was, we really don't have a bullying problem in HISD. And it turned out that a Rice University GLBT studies class for their project did an HISD bullying study by doing interviews and found that they have a severe problem.
Yes.
The problem is not that there isn't a problem, this reporting of it.
Yes.
Because the reporting stops at the principal of the school. They don't send it on. They call it something else so that they don't have to report it.
And because if you report it, you have to do something about it. You can't say that 10% of our kids are getting assaulted verbally, physically, sometimes every day, and we choose not to do anything about that.
Right, even though that is the case, unfortunately.
Yeah. So if we have someone out there that's listening, can they just show up to a Hatch meeting?
Yes, they can. If they are between 13 and 21, they can come to the Montrose Counseling Center. We meet, as you said, in the first floor, the Cultural Center.
What's the address there?
It's 401 Brainerd or Bernard, 77006. And on Fridays, it is 7 to 10. So 7 to 8 is that social hour, then the programming. And on Sunday, it's 6 to 9. And on Tuesday, it actually starts at 5 and goes to about 10. But And they can always go on that Hatch website and find the times and even find a map and figure out how to get there.
So if you're out there and you're listening, you're not alone. can come and meet some new friends and get some support and, you know, be part of our community.
And to know that you are our treasured resources and we value you and accept you as you are, and come on out.
What if someone that's listening and they're, you know, out of the area, just around the fringe of the area, because, you know, we reach the metropolitan
the
area. And the burbs and the counties beyond. Can they call? You know, they may not have transportation into the Montrose Counseling Center on this. What can they do?
They can go to the website, and we do try to offer lots of information support. They can post things on the bulletin board. We are trying to gear up into becoming actually maybe some online chats or Snapcast and some things like that, things I don't quite understand myself.
But the kids do.
Yeah, and to do that within our limited budget, and you know, we do have places on now on Facebook and, and MySpace or and all of those things, too. Any way that they can carpool. One of the nice things about having that cultural center is as PFLAG also meets and has an office there. And suddenly they noticed that some parents were bringing their kids from pretty far out and then having to spend 3 hours just sitting around at a coffee shop or sitting in the parking lot. So PFLAG has now started on some nights to offer parents night in conjunction with so the parents can drop their kids off and then go in and get actually programming from PFLAG.
Oh, that's wonderful.
PFLAG also found out that a lot of them are bringing their other kids. Maybe they can't leave them home with a babysitter or the kids are bored. So they're actually looking to try to actually add a little bit of kid babysitting and programming, too. Not brainwashing or recruiting.
recruiting all of our next generation.
But just some programming. So that's one of those synergies that happens when you put everybody together in the space. But anyway, they can carpool or talk to their parents. And if there's any way we can bring Hatch out into the community, we try to do that. You know, Deb and our other workers go out and speak all the time. We're trying to get out into the schools. And that's our kind of theory. If they can't come to us, we'll try to meet them. And the places we've actually done that, the Hatch in the schools of those support groups, are usually places where it's too far for the kids to come. We did one high school, and the kids said, you know, it would take us about 2 hours with three bus transfers to get to Hatch.
Yeah.
So we can't get there. And then they did show up for the alternative prom and had a great time.
Oh, of course.
Now, you talked about the prom. What are there some other programs that you'll have for the youth?
Well, besides our regular programming, pretty much anything that comes by that we can work or that somebody comes and offers. And so in the past, we've had writers in the school do a creative writing project. Mm-hmm. They actually did a semester of creative writing a few years ago, and that happened to coincide with the Holocaust Museum's Homosexuals in the Holocaust.
Right.
So they actually had the youth then come do a poetry reading on one of the nights in the opening of that exhibit. We've done video production. We've been doing a lot of improvisation and theater work. The Alley Theater and Diverse Work sends people out to us. So we offer all that kinds of programming, and sometimes we even have to move it to different nights if it's something. So we're always offering any of those kinds of programming. The kids also, the youth are very strong that the support group is important to them. You know, whatever we're doing, we still want to have the support group so we can talk about our issues. Currently, it's the improvisation and the creative writing are the two programs that we're running on Tuesday.
And now, how did you get involved with the Montrose Counseling Center?
I've been there about 10 and a half years, and if you ask me, the short answer was, in all the work I had done, and I was clergy before I became a counselor. I had worked doing chemical dependency counseling for years, was starting to do come out and then be involved a bit with the GLBT community. And when I came to Houston, it was in 91, and it was immediately in the middle of HIV.
That was the height. Yeah.
And so if you had asked me when I was looking for the next career, what I wanted to do. I wanted to do counseling, and I wanted to work with the gay community, people living with AIDS, HIV/AIDS, and also I wanted to do some chemical dependency work. And the miracle was I got a job at the Montrose Counseling Center, which has all of that.
You covered it all.
It's probably the only place in the city or the state where I could do that, and I've been there ever since.
Very good. And you do the Montrose Counseling Center does so many different things. I mean, I like the elderly program, the SPRI program.
SPRI, it's wonderful. Yes, wonderful program.
Unique. Yeah.
We have 4 peer support groups going with SPRI, and there are no cost to the participants at all. We managed to get funding from the Area Agency on Aging for that, so the county and the city are now helping to support that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That.
Great.
You know, it's a unique problem that we have elderly GOBT.
Yes.
We have advancing through the rainbow years, so to speak.
And we still have our shelter for GOBT people who are homeless because of domestic violence from their same-sex partners. We have any grant we can get a hold of that helps help people afford counseling. So for people who are HIV positive can have counseling and case management. Hate crimes survivors can have counseling and case management, sexual assault, sexual abuse. Now the elders and we even, if people can't afford it, we have the treatment program for drug and alcohol addiction that can be paid for in a grant.
Give us the contact information again.
Again, at Montrose Counseling Center, 713-529-0037. And if you press 0, then you go right to the front desk and say you want to do an intake appointment for counseling, or you can ask about any of those other programs. And if you go to the website, it's all there too. If you want to watch the videos that we've made, we've got a couple of videos about our elder program.
Those are great. Yeah,
the Hatch one has one that the youth themselves made. It's interesting. In that one, they asked the youth as part of the thing, you know, how many acts of violence or homophobia do you witness in a given day in your school day? And the answers that they give just kind of keep building up.
So they can go to Facebook. They also have MySpace to contact and the Hatch.
Hatch Youth.
Youth is which one?
HatchYouth.org. www.HatchYouth.org.
Well, Chris Kerr, thank you very much. Clinical Director of the Montrose Counseling Center.
Thank you very much. And those of you who want to attend Hatch, please go check out the website.
Come on.
Go out there.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices. I won't stay.
Tina Shelker from 2007, The Honeymoon is Over from the album of the same name. Coming up next on Queer Voices, Johnny Hooks from Theater Under the Stars. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
And we're back. This is Brian Levinka.
And Miss Jennifer and I.
And we're talking about theater, one of my favorite topics.
Yes. Tots Theater Under the Stars.
Yes,
my favorite place to be.
We love Tots.
And we have Johnny Hooks from Tots.
And I'm so thankful y'all have me back. Thank you so
much.
Oh, we
love it.
This is my second time,
PR and marketing coordinator with Tots.
Living in Houston, one of the advantages is the culture and the theater, the huge theater district, and just all of the enrichment. And I strongly encourage you to take advantage. There was the open house this past weekend.
That's right, Sunday.
And it's so awesome to see all those people that don't ever go to the Hobby Center. And they're like, oh, my God, this place is awesome.
Well, people don't realize that we have an incredible, very different venues here. The theater is big.
One of the
musicals
one of the largest
here.
Theater districts in the country.
Oh, absolutely. Many... plays and musicals that are startup to come here beforehand. I know, let's see, what was it?
Beauty
and the Beast came. Beauty and the Beast.
We started, Tut started Beauty and the Beast.
But Beauty and the Beast came and they gave us the little
fill it out here.
What we had, our comments about it. Also, Phantom came here. They ran it past us before they went
Jekyll
to
and Hyde.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Yes.
Jekyll and Hyde, we did a co-production with the Alley Theater. Yes.
Oh, yes. And, you know, that's something that all of you need to realize, that we have one of the greatest theater districts.
And it's so affordable. It really is. It's not just for people who have tons of money. Our tickets start at $24 basically for every show.
Now, for our listeners that may not know, what is Tuts and Theater Under the Stars?
Theater Under the Stars was started in 1968 by Frank Young, and the first production was out at Miller Outdoor Theater, and it was...
Thus the name, The
yes,
Stars.
Yes, exactly. And Frank made sure that Houston became a destination stop for world-class musical theater, and we've done annual shows at Miller every year since then, and they're always summer shows, but we have six shows at the Hobby Center, which is our current location.
Please tell us more.
The fabulous Hobby Center.
The Hobby Center is really cool, and we do what we call Out of Touch, which is for our GLBT friends and their friends, no matter what your orientation is. The first Thursday night of every main stage production. So the first one for this season is Grease, which is September 10th. And they start after the show, and they start in Artista. And Artista has free bites and happy hour prices, and the cast comes, and people sing.
It's so awesome.
And like, it's so fun.
Everyone's behind around the piano. And
Lila Ford's plays piano.
Oh, it's
And I host. Mm-hmm. Not to, like, blow my own horn, but a little bit.
You do a good job. And it's all show tunes, and everybody's just singing.
And everyone has such a great time. And if you don't, if there's not another time for you to have an opportunity to meet the cast, this is your chance. Because generally, the cast comes to every Out of Touch, no matter whether it's a tour or a self-produced show.
You know, I have to blow my own horn. I met Matt Cavanaugh, who's currently starring.
And isn't he the most dreamy guy?
He's starring
too.
He's starring in West Side Story on Broadway right now. He's playing Tony, and he is really good looking
and so nice.
Yes.
And
you're married. Well, I am, but I can. You know, you can eat. You can look at the menu as long as you eat at home.
That's okay. Exactly. But it's so nice.
That's
because
always the excuse, girls.
It's very low key, and they come and they don't, and it's very fun because it's their first night out to like sort of do something and embrace Houston audiences, and I love the fact that it's Out of Touch that brings them out for the first time, no pun intended.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Well, and I was saying before we got on the air that I have had season tickets for many years in the past, and I never got to meet the cast. You know, this is an opportunity for you, right, if you really love the theater, to get an opportunity to meet the cast.
And to sing. And the cast,
to sing with them.
And the cast will come up and sing with you. So, that's what's so great.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, we provide music, but if you want to bring your own, that's fine. But it's amazing. Dalton DeHart's always there, snapping photos.
Always.
And, and the experience is so amazing because you really feel like you're part of the cast, even if you're not. And it's a once in a lifetime opportunity for every show we have. I love it.
I think the last one I went to was for Happy Days, and it was so much fun. And the cast was there, and there were, you know, some really good looking actors.
Yes,
yes, and I was just having a great old time.
And they don't mind taking photos at all.
Yeah.
So this season we're doing Out of Touch on the road. It's our first time.
Oh, tell us about that.
Leaving the Hobby Center. We're actually going to be going to JR's.
So it's after. Okay, so you have the Thursday night show. And
it's
then
the first Thursday night of every performance.
Okay, and so it's just everybody goes to JR's.
No. First,
wherever.
Well, the first Thursday night, everyone goes to Artista. But for this one event, we're going to JR's to do Meet Me in St. Louis.
When is this?
Oh, well.
And we're gonna. It's Thursday night, September 24th.
Okay.
And Randall Jobe,
yes,
know her,
of course,
love her.
She's been serving drinks forever.
Forever. She and I were in a play together, actually.
Really?
Called Judy at the Stonewall Inn at the Stages.
Oh, my God. I love. There we go. There's another great theater.
I know. So we're doing, this is the first Out of Touch on the road, and we're doing a Judy lookalike contest.
Oh, my God. That's going to be crazy.
And,
you're going to have a madhouse.
It's on the night of.
You're going to need crowd control.
It's on the night of karaoke, and there's going to be like prizes and special drink prices, and we're gonna Randall's bringing out the food, and we're gonna do the whole thing. It's gonna be so much fun. It's from 9 to 11 on Thursday night, September 24th. Yes.
Oh my God, you're gonna have to have like
Out at Touch on the road. How fun!
It's crazy. Now you've alluded to the season this year. Let's talk about the season.
Well, we've got some timeless classics. I mean, Meet Me in St. Louis. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with Judy.
Chang Chang Chang.
Yeah, we've got Grease. And this week, actually, tomorrow night, Wednesday the 2nd.
That's today. Two days from now.
2 days from now.
Yeah.
2 days from now, we're doing a Grease sing-along at the Angelica.
I saw that.
Really?
And it's actual bouncing ball sing-along.
Please. I don't even know. I know every word.
I mean, we all know the words.
Well,
every word.
Some of us don't have them memorized like you do.
I can't.
David would kill me if I sang. He says I cannot sing. But I think I sing very nicely. Thank you.
Then go with a boy or two.
Oh, yes.
If I can only be so lucky.
Hopefully.
Yes.
So that's going to be a single one.
Angelica, yes. And we've got a couple of VIP packages.
Is there a cost for that?
It's just regular price.
Okay.
Right, so just come along, bring your gay self and sing.
Yes, and it's the first of four of our movies we're going to show at the Angelica. We're doing a whole series. We're doing Grease, Meet Me in St. Louis, South Pacific, and Sound of Music.
Oh my gosh.
And it's
I'd love that.
It's kind of coinciding with your season.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we really decided this year and really last year to have these events that invite people to participate, because we feel like that, you know, if you can get a little bit closer with your favorite musical,
Oh, yes.
Why not?
And who doesn't like to sing along?
And and then you don't have to worry about, like, people saying, shh.
Oh, my God. I've almost been chased out of the theater, like, in London, because I was singing
along. Oh, you should have heard the people when I went down there to see Mamma Mia.
Oh, did you go to
see? That's the same thing. Exactly.
My girlfriend and I, we were up there dancing and singing. These people said, sit down and shut up.
Oh, my God. I was crazy. At the Mamma Mia. Now, who put that on? Was that just Miller Outdoor Theater?
Well, Mamma Mia, the sing-along that was at the Hobby Center?
Yes.
This was outside at Miller.
Oh.
No, I went to the Hobby Center.
Oh, this is the one. It was like a week or two ago. It was outside at the...
Oh, no, Miller. This was some time ago.
It's become quite popular, these sing-along versions.
There were straight people there. I'm like, what are y'all doing here?
This
is our place.
Hey. They like to sing along. They're just gay wannabes.
I know, right?
Well, I mean, you know, it finally gives them a chance to, like, sing out loud and sing out proud. And why not? Because we've been doing it for a long time.
Oh, I have been. And I do, the hand motions, and I get all crazy.
And we're going to have, we're gonna have bags and, like, prop materials and all kind of stuff. We've got a whole series, and we're really looking forward to that. It's going to be really fun.
Well, that's like those years, the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Exactly.
And we were always down there dressed, and all these straight people would come in so they could sing and pretend to be gay.
Were you dressed as a boy or a girl back then?
Yes.
See all of the above.
I was at the Alabama Theater.
That's
actually.
Where.
That's how long ago I
would drive over with friends from Beaumont, Texas,
no.
to go see it on
that's
Saturday.
Crazy.
Oh yes. Oh yes. That was that was the only place we could really be
it's
ourselves.
True. It's true.
Oh yeah. We drive over and
you were Frankenfurter, weren't you?
I'll never tell.
I see.
But it was.
I was proud.
Oh, getting up. I remember the first time I did. And you know, we talk about these sing-alongs and how wonderful it is to get involved and be part of and participate.
Well,
and that's the way we loved about Rocky Horror. I still do Time Warp.
Somebody said to me earlier today, they said, you know, we didn't even have the luxury of having the bouncing ball for those shows.
Oh, no. We had them memorized.
We just knew it.
Yeah.
So I think that any of our opportunities to show these films, which again are Grease starting this week, Meet Me in St. Louis, which is when is Meet Me in St. Louis?
It's coming up.
The 23rd at the Angelica, Sound of Music, and then also South Pacific, to see those shows on the big screen,
right?
And have a chance to just, I mean, who cares? Just sing out loud. No one's gonna like. There's no shushing involved with these shows.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Can you dance too?
Yes.
Ah, good. All right.
Now, but this also coincides with the Tut season. You have the performances of these plays as well. Is that right?
That's right. We Tut only does musicals, and so we're thrilled.
Praise God for that.
We're thrilled, you know, and we've got a very charming season. We've got Grease, which starts next week, and we've got Meet Me in St. Louis, which is Judy Garland, which, of course, any queer must show up and bring their friends and their mothers. And we have a great thing. We're doing it's a special event for Meet Me in St. Louis. It's a trolley tea tour where you actually get on a trolley at the Hobby Center and tour Houston.
Downtown?
And,
oh, my
no,
God.
No, no, no. You go to the Bayou Bend, and you go to the Historic Heights. And then you go to a classic high tea at the Noble Lady Manor in the Woodland Heights, and then you go back to the theater for an evening performance of Meet Me in St. Louis, and it's like literally you are a part of the show. You're not, but hats, parasols, and long gloves are encouraged.
My. That is the gayest thing I've heard. That's
the gayest thing.
I love it.
Grandparents' Day is coming up this week, and so you could invite your grandparent and bond with them and bring them, and it's so wonderful. We are trying to do so many things because we want to engage our patrons and not just have them be someone who just comes, sees the show, and leaves. We want you to feel a part of it.
We want you to live the theater as we
do. That's right.
You know, it's wonderful about that. And there are a lot of... pardon my expression, stiff people that come and they sit so prim and proper and
they wear their suits.
They applaud at the right time.
The golf claps.
Yes. Oh, this is wonderful. And they'll stand up for the standing ovation at the end.
But they're zipping out the door.
They're out the door and on their way home, you know.
Before the encore is over, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
After the first bow,
we're looking to engage the real theater people in this town. And you know, we're the only nonprofit musical theater company in this city. And we look forward to having people be able to experience theater in a different way.
Yeah. We've had a number of really great artists from Houston go on to really make it big. Tommy Tune. That was the first one I was thinking of.
We have the Tommy Tune Awards every year.
Absolutely. Yeah. And many people don't even know who Tommy Tune is, which is really a shame.
Which is shocking.
That's
my favorite word, sacrilege.
But it is. And it's a shame because we have such greats coming out of Houston, and most people don't understand. I mean, we can't even... Two-thirds of the people don't even know there's a mayoral election, and we're trying to get them to understand that we have a great theater. theater district, and we have great theater here. World-class theater.
Doesn't Tuts have a school for musical theater?
We do. We have the Humphreys School of Musical Theater, and they have produced people like Chandra Wilson,
mm-hmm.
who's on Grey's Anatomy.
Right.
Patrick Swayze was part of our school.
Wow.
We've had many many more people than you would even recognize. it's great because we have classes for adults and for kids.
Oh yeah.
On your lunch hour, if you want to do like something for a ballet boot camp, which will, you know, kick your ass. Oh, can I say ass?
Probably not, but they'll bleep it out.
Yes, but
if they don't, we apologize.
I do apologize.
It was his fault.
It's my fault. So you can do that on your lunch hour, and you know, refine your body and make yourself more taut get back to it's for people who've never done ballet before, mm-hmm. or for people who have done ballet before. We've got classes for all kinds of people. Our school, I think, is one of the most unknown presence of our of Tuts, and it's so great.
How do we get tickets, and how do we find out more information?
Everything can be found at www.tuts.com.
Tuts.com or Tuts.org?
Tuts.com.
Okay.
Or org.
They both go.
They both.
Either one of them.
Both.
And is there a box office number or just
713-558-TUTS is our box office number, and they can sell or update you on any of the packages we have. You know, we've got this package with American Idol winner Taylor Hicks. It's a pre-show sort of VIP experience.
Oh wonderful.
We're going to have a book signing. I mean, I would really recommend for most people to go to Tuts.com and bookmark that and go back every day or so because all of our events are on there.
All right.
So
thank
get
you.
Out there, enjoy the theater, be part of the show, Tuts.com, Tuts.org, and go see Grease.
That's right. That's and right. We've been with...
And Mimi in St. Louis.
Yes, we've been talking with Johnny Hooks.
Clang, clang, clang.
PR marketing of Theater Under the Stars. Thank you very much.
Thank you all so much.
Right. This is Queer Voices.
The other night, so I walked down the street to the neighborhood open mic, thinking if I played a couple of tunes, it just might make me feel all right. So I walked up to the bar, put down my guitar, and ordered myself a tea, cause I couldn't afford a beer. And then I sat down and took a look around the place and surveyed all the faces in there.
slamming back a couple of pitchers and a group of teachers in V-neck sweaters planning their next strike. And on the mic was a Kurt Cobain lookalike in Converse shoes singing some grunge love suicide blues. There were some old boys sitting at the bar giving me the stare. They were checking out my hair. And I thought, oh my God, what am I doing in here right now? I really could use that beer. The open mic, my troll's feeling a little tight and it's getting hot in here. I'm the only dyke at the open mic. I wish I was on that flight tonight. How Joni, get me out of here. So when Kurt sang his final note, he left the stage to smoke cigarettes and drink himself depressed. And the hostess asked if I'd like to sing a couple of tunes. Well, I guess I didn't have much to lose. I jumped up on stage, but I bumped into the mic stand and it crash landed to the floor. And the hostess ran up to help me out as I was fighting off my second round of self-doubt. And I'm the only dyke at the open mic, and the mic's down on the floor, and I'm already looking for the door. Yeah, I'm the only dyke at the open mic. I'm just trying to look cool, but I'm feeling a little bit. Then it took me for what seemed like forever to tune my guitar, and I could hear the old boys at the bar snickering through the darkness, and I'm still thinking, do I really have to go through with this? And then the microphone started feeding back on me, and the sound guy freaked out. And I felt like I was in one of those classic movie scenes, you know, or like the time when Ellen DeGeneres finally came out. The bar had their backs to me now, and Kurt Cobain was getting drunk and loud, and the teachers were getting rowdy and ready to call a union meeting, and me, I was still contemplating leaving. And then I heard someone say, I hope this chick doesn't stick around, cause I've had enough for one day. But then I ripped into my first song, you know, and I blew them all away. Round of whistling and clapping, and as I was packing up my guitar case, one of the boys from the bar came over with a really sheepish look on his face. And I'm thinking, okay, what's this guy gonna say to me? I better get ready. But then he slapped me on the shoulder and he said with a grin, I love your songs, man. I wish I was a lesbian. Strumming my guitar in this dingy little bar, yeah. I'm the only dyke at the open mic, belting out songs about women feeling good when I'm singing. I'm the only dyke at the open mic, strumming my guitar in this dingy little bar, yeah. I'm the only dyke at the open mic. Some nights I gotta push myself.
That was Kate Reed in a fairly new recording from 2009 anyway, and it was called Only Dyke at the Open Mic from the album I'm Just Getting Started. This is Queer Voices.
What was that?
That was me making a mistake.
We're going to fire Glenn. No.
Oh, no, don't do that.
We love that.
Hey, I just need my other half cup of coffee, that's all.
Exactly. Your half We're cup. All fine. I'll let you have part of mine if you want.
Oh, not the coffee you drink. No, no, no.
You inject your coffee, right?
Oh, no. Nothing like that. I get it intravenously.
Right. For those of you who are still listening to our program and are staying up for the late, late part of our program.
Yes, the special part of our program.
The best part.
Yes.
This is Brian Laminka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And in the studio, we have Sean Carter, who is the president among, I can't even name all the stuff you're in. He's the president of the Houston GLBT Chamber of Conference.
The Greater Houston
Commerce.
GLBT.
Yes. Chamber Welcome, of Sean.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for staying up with this.
Yeah, this is kind of late on a Monday, huh?
Yes, it's late.
Well, just in case someone out there just moved into the city, tell us about the chamber.
Well, the chamber is we are an organization that promotes and we advocate for the economic and cultural development of the GLBT community and supporting businesses as well. It's a great place for people to network. You don't have to be a business owner. Our membership includes nonprofits, for-profit businesses. They include individuals. And in fact, earlier this year at one of our networking events, there was a young man who had moved here from the Northeast and happened to see on a meetup that we were doing a networking event, and he didn't know anyone in this town.
Oh,
and so he's actually, I just talked to him, I think about a week ago. He was, he's traveling again and he can't wait to get back. And he's just told me that he had met a lot of people and made a lot of connections through that one night. So it really is a great place for
people. It does work. Mm-hmm. It does.
And do you have a physical office location?
No, we don't.
You're like a virtual.
We're a virtual office.
Right. Yeah,
we did years ago. We're different in the fact that I went to the national, the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce conference in Seattle, and I was kind of jealous because a lot of the bigger cities have paid staff and offices.
We're a big city.
We're the fourth largest city.
I know, but that's why I was jealous, because all these other big cities, they had staff and all this kind of stuff, and here we are. But I was very proud because we are all volunteer, and we're successful in what we do. We're not paying someone to do the admin work. We're all kind of hands-on, so...
I guess you mean the more gay meccas than I guess maybe Houston's not as much of a gay mecca.
No, I wouldn't say that. I would just say that we actually have learned how to do it without having to pay someone. It is easier for them. I got to tell you, I learned a lot from the conference, because there are some things that they were doing. I mean, one, for instance, this year's been a really tough year for organizations like us,
right.
Businesses, the first thing they do when they're trying to cut their budget is get rid of organizational memberships and that kind of thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
But one thing that a lot of other cities around the country are doing is that they had decided to let nonprofits actually join for free.
Ooh.
So the board voted in July that we would actually allow all nonprofits in our community to be a member of the chamber with no cost.
Now, how do you promote business? I mean, what sort of things are y'all doing as an organization?
Well, this year, like I said, we've really cut back on the expenditures, especially because the membership has, we've had members ask us if we have lower rates and that kind of thing so they can stay members. We are concentrating on our monthly networking, which thanks to, I heard Randall Jobe's name mentioned earlier, and he is just the goddess of everything. So
no, you're the goddess of everything.
Well,
he's just a princess.
Well, no, well, you know, I'll have to tell him that.
I'm sure he's listening.
I know. So he's been great. We actually have our monthly networking at JR's every month.
When is that?
It's normally, now, of course, I'm going to say this, and this month it's going to change. It's normally the second Tuesday of every month. It's in the Santa Fe side of JR's.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Randall is wonderful. He just puts up drink specials and does all the food for us, and we have a great time. This month, because Labor Day is really messed up.
Oh, yes.
It's kind of messing everybody up. We decided, rather than do it, you know, the right after Labor Day, we're going to do it the next week.
So the not this Tuesday, not tomorrow, or a week from tomorrow, 2 weeks from tomorrow.
2 weeks from tomorrow.
Right.
Exactly.
The 15th.
Right.
15th.
And so what can people expect? Just networking? And
we do networking. There's usually a theme every month. One thing we've gotten into is that, yes, you know queens love themes.
We
so
do.
The one thing that we do is that it is hard. If you walk into a networking event and you don't know anyone, it is very difficult just to walk up and, well, for some people, you know, I could talk to a wall.
I know.
But,
yeah,
and you could too, Ron. But I do. We actually make it to where, like last month, our vice president of programming, Rocky Hensarling, who does a great job at these, he puts together for instance, when you sign in, you get a little question that he's got a list of questions. You know, where does it? You know, where if you could go one place in the world, where would it be? And it's written on your name badge. So it actually does make it interesting, and people will come up to you and ask your question, and then that's kind of sparks a conversation.
That's so clever. I've been to something similar to that. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, because it's very intimidating to walk into those things, and everybody's like in their little groups.
I can only imagine the person from out of town just showing up.
Yeah,
it's got to be remarkable.
And that night we did, the one night that he came, we had kind of like it was a contest of who could get the most questions answered. So everybody had a purpose of walking up to people, asking them a question on this list that we gave them. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of spawns that whole talking and meeting people. And then we also do a networking breakfast, which, you know, so we can make it available to everybody. Some people can do the after work, you know, have a drink or just go meet people. And some people are morning people. I'm not necessarily the best morning person. But the third week, the third Wednesday of every month, which, again, this month is all messed up, so it'll be the fourth Wednesday.
Right. But usually the third Wednesday. Is there a particular place where y'all meet?
Yes, we do it at Cafe Express on West Gray. And everyone just says Cafe Express for breakfast? Yes, they do serve breakfast.
Not that I've ever gotten up early enough.
I've done a lot of lunches there and dinners there, right. But never a breakfast.
And breakfast is really good. And it's so we meet there at 7:30, and we all get to...
Oh, Lord.
Exactly.
No. Gee, that's late.
It's pretty early for me,
too.
I'll
stay up for that one.
Right. So 7:30 we meet. We have breakfast. And Danny Callen, who is our vice president of membership, he just does a wonderful job. He's a morning person. It's kind of scary to be around him that early in the morning. But he does a great job of and that's one time where we're all sitting at a table. So, there was one month where we had someone come that didn't really know anyone. But Danny does such a wonderful job of making sure that everybody feels like they've been there for months.
He makes it really welcoming. Very important, especially to making people feel that way so they'll want to come back.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is with all this, it's the point of making sure that we are supporting our local businesses in the GLBT community. And we also have a lot of businesses in mainstream Houston that are also supporting us. We recently, one of our big coups of the year was Waste Management became a corporate member.
Oh, wow.
That's good.
Yeah. They really wanted to get involved in the GLBT community, so they became a big member, and we liked their big check that came with it.
Right. Gay trash haulers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Gray yes.
Now, once upon a time, the chamber had the expo. That kind of went away.
Mm-hmm. Actually, and I will tell you that on a national level, that was brought up at the conference in Seattle, and a lot of them have restructured. Mm-hmm. Many cities have stepped away from it. It's a huge cost. This year, we're looking at bringing something back of a smaller nature. And one thing that the chamber talked about this year is possibly doing a nonprofit business fair. Mm. The expo was a huge expense for the chamber.
Right. I bet it was.
And it was at the
George R. Brown.
Yes.
And all these booths, and it was crazy.
Exactly. And this is a different day. With the economy, those kind of expenses are just not really...
They're not realistic.
They're not an option for us.
That was the glory days of the early 2000s.
It was. Yes. And we had all those people there and all these wonderful meetings and parties and... even had Jay Rodriguez was there one year.
I was there when he was there. I was dancing on... It was like a dance thing, and I was dancing. He was there.
Mm-hmm. You're always dancing.
No, I used... I put up my dancing shoes a couple years ago.
Just be glad you don't sing.
I don't sing. I'm trying to. Now, what sort of fundraising do y'all do to raise funds for the Chamber of Commerce?
The Chamber is... We're not a fundraising organization.
Okay.
So our treasury is based on our membership fees. We are planning on doing an Honoring Our Allies event. That's our annual event. And it's going to be scheduled for November. Right now, we're just, with this community, there's only about 10,000 things go on every week.
Right.
Absolutely.
So we've moved it from February to November. November is our annual meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We elect the new officers, the new board members. And so we're scheduling it. Also, we're trying to get a really prominent speaker.
Mm-hmm.
So balancing the potential speaker schedule and what's going on in the community. And now I wish I could say
it. I wish you could be a new mayor.
So that would be exactly.
Oh.
So. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That would be great.
But, and well, so you're going to fit it in between the election and Thanksgiving, Halloween, right?
Yeah, exactly. We are somehow going to do it between those. And actually, with all the election stuff going on, I did just I mentioned to Chris Banks today with the caucus about doing a joint chamber caucus event before the election for kind of, I want the business owners as well who are not necessarily heavily involved in the political races and stuff, but I really do want the members of the chamber to have a chance to meet the endorsed candidates by the caucus.
That's wonderful.
So we're going to start trying to get that out. We'll be planning that pretty quickly since it's what, 10 weeks away.
You better
10
be weeks away. It's right. Not that long now.
Now, tell us some other things that the chamber does that we don't know about.
You know, well, I think the one thing that I found interesting and that the national office, they do some great things. They give you know, some national awards. But we also, just being a member of the chamber, we get the benefits of, you know, UPS is a national member of the National Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
So you get up to 26% off of any UPS stuff. Mm-hmm. If you're a member of our chamber, you get all those discounts. You get a discount with Avis Rental Car. You get a discount with Wyndham Hotels and RSVP Cruises for all of you wonderful folks who love those
cruises,
RSVP
those
cruises.
Gay cruises.
Mm-hmm, those gay cruises. You get a wonderful discount with all that. And throughout the year, we also give different educational speakers at different dinners or socials. This summer, we kind of took a break on the dinner circuit because it just seems like right now summer is just not the time where everyone wants to go to a dinner and hear a speaker. But we do have some amazing topics, and we try to bring out, we try to highlight the folks who kind of have a best practices way of speaking so they can also teach other business owners. And right now, especially with the way the economy's been, we see and we hear constantly how business owners are trying to find a better way to do their business. And I think we're helping out that way.
Absolutely.
Now, have we said how to get in touch with y'all?
Thechamberhouston.org. It's really easy.
You don't have a phone number,
but we do have a website. And there, on the website, there's a way to get in touch with every officer there is. And
okay. Just want to
so
make
you
sure.
Can, yeah. You
just get it in a couple of times.
Exactly. So it's thechamberhouston.org. And the problem is people forget the. You have to actually fit the chamber.
You have to
chamber.
Put the in there.
Don't put Chamber Houston. Just put the Houston. The Chamber Houston.
Now, how long has the chamber been around?
The chamber was founded in 1995.
Okay.
So next year will be the 15th anniversary.
Oh.
And Christina Martinez.
Love her.
Who, yes, she is. She's my president-elect, and she will take over next year and be handling the 15th anniversary. So, and actually, my partner, who I forced back on the board this year, he was one of the founding members way back then.
Way back
then. And he, because he's that old.
But he's active as you are.
Yeah, he is.
And which is kind of scary, because usually in a relationship, there's the real active one, and there's kind of the quiet, shadow one.
Exactly.
So now we're just like this dynamic duo.
I think we scared a lot of people when we got together.
I know.
We actually have to, we schedule everything in our lives. Yeah. You know, we have to figure out when we're going to actually be where.
I can't imagine being with someone who has as many meetings as I do, and I'm like, how does that work?
How has the chamber changed over the years, since it's coming up on 15 years?
I think, the strangest thing is that I see from, because I first became active in 98 with the chamber.
Okay.
And, which is actually how Jeff and I met.
And, really?
Mm-hmm, we were friends forever.
Aww.
And, but the thing is, I do think that in the beginning, there's always that motivation in the beginning,
mm-hmm,
where people want to do something new and everything. Right. And then you kind of see it taper a little bit, and then all of a sudden the 10th anniversary comes up and everyone's back involved. And
right.
So, here we are in the cycle of people kind of get used to it. And one thing I do think that all the groups, and that's why a big reason why I want to get the caucus and the chamber to work together is because I think that we have become used to things being accepted and that kind of stuff. So, and I want to get back to the fact that we still need to keep fighting to make sure that our community and our businesses.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's so many organizations that have come and gone because
we've
become complacent and apathetic.
Exactly. And especially the business cycle, we need our own people to support us and I think that's very important for the chamber to remember.
Well, there's still a struggle out there.
Mm-hmm.
We still are in the midst of a struggle. It isn't over yet. What really surprises me, a lot of young people think our community already have protections and employment housing and public accommodations.
Right.
And that's only because they feel free to go about what they want. But there are no protections in the city or the state. So those are things we got to do. So it is still part of the battle we fight.
Yeah, it is still part of the battle. And that's another issue is that, you know, our bylaws actually state that to be a member, you actually have to have, you know, non-discrimination somewhere in your business policy. So, and it is amazing that people who join don't really, some people who want to be a member because they want the benefits, they don't understand that we actually do need you to be a part of this fight.
Yeah, you need to be non-discriminatory if you're going to belong to the organization.
Exactly.
Okay, well, is there any questions we haven't asked? Because we got just a few seconds now.
I just think that, like I said, my biggest thing that I'm trying to get at right now is that nonprofits, we are a great help to all nonprofit organizations. Whether you've got staff or you're all volunteer, it's free. Membership is free. Go to thechamberhouston.org, sign up, and start coming to functions.
Well, we were talking to Sean Carter, the president of the Houston Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for coming out and support gay business.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
This is Queer Voices.
In the northwest suburbs of Minneapolis-St. Paul, a high school student and his family were not going to take anti-gay harassment on campus lying down. Their more than a year-long legal battle against the Anoka-Hennepin School District came to an end in mid-August with a $25,000 settlement. As Minnesota's largest school district, its board's decision not to fight a ruling by the State Department of Human Rights is notable, as is the source of the homophobic bullying. This Way Out correspondents Dixie Trichel and John Townsend discuss the case with Outfront Minnesota legal director Phil Duran.
We are not talking about simply one isolated incident, but rather a pattern of behavior that this young man, who is now 18, who was a high school student in Anoka-Hennepin district to the northwest of here, experienced, I think, beginning actually in 07 and ending in 08. And what was really unusual and really disturbing about this situation is that the harassment that this young man faced came not from other students. Rather, this harassment came to him from staff, from two members of the teaching staff there in Anoka-Hennepin. Verbal harassment. It was not physical that I'm aware of, but still really pretty egregious. Just some pretty vulgar speculation about what kinds of sexual activities, if any, he may be engaged in, saying that he liked older men because he was going to do a book report on Benjamin Franklin or
right.
something of that nature. Conduct that you would think that any adult would sort of think first, is this appropriate? And particularly if it's a teacher.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that's what really strikes at a lot of people
yep.
was these are teachers. These are adults, quote unquote, mm-hmm. who were behind this. And so there's just been a tremendous outrage. This was written up in the paper and has been on the news quite a bit now. It's because it would appear that the man and his family, I suppose, filed a complaint with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. They appear to have found probable cause to believe that the Anoka-Hennepin District had violated the state human rights law, which prohibits discrimination and harassment in schools based on actual or perceived sexual orientation, and that the settlement followed. And John, I know from our conversations, you really wanted to emphasize something that's really important here, which is that it's being reported that this young man is not gay, but
right.
that he was perceived as such by his teachers.
Right, and I think that's an important thing. This is why I've always said, as cliche as this sounds, homophobia is a straight issue. People will assume right off the bat that they're queer or that they're homosexual or lesbian. This just goes to show that, you know, it could happen to anybody.
In this particular situation, it appears that a student was targeted who apparently is not gay.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's pretty safe to imagine that there were probably other students
oh, yeah.
in these classroom
oh.
settings, because these were not apparently incidents that happened out in the parking lot where no one was around. This,
mm-hmm.
These were things that apparently were being said in the classroom.
Yeah,
and
right.
I think it's probably safe to imagine that there probably were GLBT students in that class. Maybe the teachers knew, maybe they didn't,
mm-hmm.
who
mm-hmm.
did observe this conduct, even though it was directed at someone else, felt it. In a sense, targeting themselves as well. So
absolutely.
I suspect that there's a ripple effect here that may or may not ever get documented in any formal mm-hmm. way, but I think we can imagine that it's there.
I have the article here, and one of the things that the young man who was targeted said was that, "I'm not the first kid this has happened to.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad for the kid who was homosexual in that class, seeing that mm-hmm. I was belittled. If kids feel this is what they're going through at work, at school, at the house, you've got to tell somebody." it's really excellent that he and his mother stepped forward.
What's happening to these teachers now?
As far as I know, John, the conduct that this young man complained of occurred under the previous superintendent and their administration, and they came up with consequences that, by all indications, appear to be pretty minimal, and that has generated a tremendous amount of outrage. Not only has it seemed that you've got this young man being harassed by teachers, but then the teachers appear to be, in essence, let off the hook with little more than a slap on the wrist. Mm-hmm. The reality, and we can like it or not like it, but the reality of teacher discipline is that it's actually a very complex process that is governed by contracts and by law. And so, as unsatisfying as I think most people seem to feel that the consequences were for these teachers, it seems unlikely at this point that there's much more that can be done, other than the fact that, yeah, you know, now they're, you know, they open up the paper every morning and their letters to the editor calling for their heads. Communities that Anoka Hennepin serves tend to be very conservative districts, and I do want to make the point, there are so many members of the staff at Anoka Hennepin who are equally outraged, if not more outraged, because mm-hmm. when they're out and they say, oh, where do you work, and they have to say Anoka Hennepin, they say that with a degree of embarrassment now mm-hmm. because of the situation. I know that there are GLBT teachers and staff there and allies who are appalled and who are committed to making sure from the inside, from a staff perspective, that the district does not let this drop and uses this as an opportunity to learn how to do better so this never happens again. Unrelated to this particular complaint, Alfred Minnesota had contacted the district back at the beginning of June to say, you know, back in February of 2009, you rolled out this new, and I use the phrase sexual orientation policy, it's a shorthand, but to my knowledge, you've never actually introduced it to your staff, let alone train them or let them know what your expectations are under it. Mm-hmm. And there are some other shortcomings that we think that would be great for you to address. You are the state's largest school district, and we know you can do a lot better. And one aspect of that was training for teachers. And the response from an associate superintendent was, thanks, we've got under control, no problem, we don't need any training. And obviously, the incidents of the past week have shown that perhaps mm-hmm. that was a misstatement on her part. We have invited the superintendent to reconsider. I know members of the board have been explicit in terms of saying training is necessary. Members of the staff have joined that call. The superintendent and the board issued a statement that condemned this incident mm-hmm. with the harassing of the student. Said that's absolutely unacceptable, and we will be looking at everything that we can do to make sure that this doesn't happen again. That's terrific. It's talking the talk. And so we appreciate that statement. The ball is now in their court to demonstrate through concrete actions and commitments what they're actually going to do, including teacher training and enhancing staff responsibilities around the area of GLBT students and their families.
So ironic, we've been looking at the problem of bullying in schools the past few years pretty closely, and it turns out the teachers in this case are doing the bullying.
Right. Yeah. And you bring up a really good point. In the legislative session earlier this year, the legislature, by clear bipartisan majorities, approved a bill that would have expanded the requirements imposed on districts. Right now, the law requires that districts have an anti-violence and harassment policy in place that deals with racial, sexual, and religious-based harassment. But there's obviously a mismatch between that list and what you find in the Human Rights Act, where it goes into things like national origin, disability, sexual orientation, so on. This bill would have, in essence, equalized those two, made those lists the same, mm-hmm. and expanded those requirements for districts. And it was Governor Pawlenty, unfortunately, vetoed that bill, and it was really disappointing. What I'm hoping that we can do is really channel our frustration and our anger with the situation into constructively engaging the superintendent and the Anoka Hennepin School Board to take the right actions moving forward.
Outfront Minnesota Legal Director Phil Duran discussed a Twin Cities student harassment case with Dixie Trichel and John Townsend. According to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, social studies teacher Diane Cleveland was suspended for 2 days without pay before the settlement was announced. She had been assigned to develop an equality and diversity curriculum during the suspension, but she only worked 1 day and called in sick the rest of the week. No disciplinary action against law enforcement teacher Walter Filson has been reported.
Hi, I'm Andrew Sullivan. Listeners all over the world tune in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine, for information, entertainment, and up-to-the-minute news from lesbian and gay communities around the world.
The transmusical genres change on a dime in this month's audiophile.
Anomaly Brennan starts off an all-transgender edition of audiophile. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. This is the seventh album by Anomaly Brennett, and it's called Until From This Dream I Wake.
This year, oh yes, this year, it's been a hard year, holding on. 'Cause this time, oh yes, this time, I was half crazy.
The new album is a little bit of a different direction for me than some of my previous ones. Kind of more just a look at some things that happened to me over the past couple of years, some difficult stuff I went through. For better or worse, it's kind of a look at what goes on inside my own head.
Whatever it was, it felt like a friend, oh, like a touch. Somebody's hands, oh, like a moment you don't want to end. Whatever it was, let's do it again.
You can learn more about the album Until From This Dream I Wake at www.anomalybrennett.com. That's www.anomalybrennett.com.
Coyote Grace is an acoustic duo comprised of Joe Stevens, a trans man singer-songwriter, and Ingrid Ayan, his partner on and off stage.
Heaven dogs got the old show blues, hanging on by the soles of his shoes. All of this is pretty old news, and look, he's gone hunting. Hanging around your kitchen door, big brown eyes are gonna give me some more. Maybe a scrap from the floor, I'm sure there's gotta be something.
On the first Coyote Grace CD, Joe did all the writing, but this time Ingrid also wrote several songs.
Our new album, Ear to the Ground, is our second studio album, and we're very proud of it. We recorded it here in Sonoma County, where we live in Northern California, and this album not only features some really fantastic musicians that we play with fairly often, but also features some other songs written by me, Ingrid, and it's just a new evolution of our sound.
You can get more information about Coyote Grace and the album Ear to the Ground at www.coyotegrace.com.
Shotgun wedding divorce, and I just learned how to cruise. It was quite by accident that I found myself beside you. It's not just my wandering eyes whenever we go out. It's the things I lie and think about when nobody else is around. Love the way you make it boy. Give up, I can't give it back.
Yes, we've switched from folk to punk, in this case to the genre of queercore, and the band Tough Tough Skin and their album Let It Sink Down. Drummer and vocalist Radford Bishop explains what queercore is to them.
I've always described our music as queercore, but that doesn't necessarily say a whole lot either to people who are outside the queer community or specifically speaking to genre. A lot of the songs are punk rock. We mostly write about boys, drinking, and gender politics. I think from an ethics point, we're talking queercore
We're talking political, but also irreverent.
Be not so tough as you, but stand with you. We're born with Tuesday's beer. And I'm the shock kid with a crush still on my t-shirt. Hey, I've got a treehouse. Do you want to get out of here? Out of here.
Find out more about the band Tough Tough Skin and their album Let It Sink Down at www.toughtoughskin.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can learn more about Audiophile or contact us by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Hey, I've got a treehouse. Do you want to get out of here? Out of here. No irony you said from wind to my head. I'm not here to laugh. Still seen or stare. Why are we still drinking?
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Christopher David Trentum, Jen Mahoney, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Dixie Treichel and John Townsend, and J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. David Brown, Namely Bennett, Coyote Grace, and Tough Tough Skin performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, voluntary program acquisition payments by our affiliate stations, and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KSOW, Cottage Grove, Oregon, CKLU, Sudbury, Ontario, Radio Veronica, West Point, Pennsylvania, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. For the 1,118th time, please stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Every weekday at 9, KPFT features programming by you. It's called Open Journal, and it's an experiment in truly community radio. On Open Journal, regular listeners just like you come into KPFT studios to host their own programs. Sometimes it's talk, sometimes it's music, but it's always unique. Open Journal airs weekdays at 9 a.m. right after BBC headlines. The Community Spotlight at 9:30 is here for you. Open Journal is what community radio is all about. You can even participate and host your own Open Journal. Just drop by KPFT's website at kpft.org to download an Open Journal application. We provide the help, you provide the knowledge. Tune in to Open Journal at 9 a.m. weekdays. This is KPFT Houston.
Been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Polinski. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org.
For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
In keeping with KPFT's mission of bringing the voices of the community to you, here is one of your candidates in the upcoming election for local station board.
My name is Jerome Bailman, and I seek your support to serve on the local station board of KPFT. It is my hope that I can effectively serve the mission of KPFT through my experience as a nonprofit's arts administrator and a local individual artist. I am interested to serve on the LSB to further independent expression for our city. I envision KPFT to continue to provide quality programming that reflects diverse audiences of our community. The station will better serve its listeners if we provide tools and training to the next generation.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.